Today on Maine Calling, the mysterious jellyfish. The sea is home to many strange and fascinating creatures. At the top of the list, jellyfish. From a distance, they can appear to be blobs floating in the water. But close up, you see the bell or hood with long tentacles trailing along. And of course, jellyfish sting. Last month, a huge lion's mane jellyfish appeared in the shallow water at a popular beach in South Portland, and the story made news all the way to Seattle and Miami. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will learn about the jellyfish in the Gulf of Maine. Is their population on the rise? What do you do if you encounter one? And what's their role in Maine's marine ecosystem? Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible in part by Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure with 19 locations across the state, now open in Bangor and Waterville, and by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal Down East communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. If you've been to the beach or spend time on the water, maybe you've seen one. Sightings of fantastical-looking jellyfish with those long tentacles have been surging this summer. While they're known for their sting, they are also important members of Maine's marine ecosystem. We're going to learn more about these unusual creatures today. Joining me, Nick Record, who is Senior Research Scientist with the Bigelow Laboratory for Ocean Sciences. And we'd love to have you join the conversation. Tell us about your jellyfish sighting. Ask your questions about jellyfish. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Nick, thanks so much for joining us. And I just want to start by saying, I understand you really, really, really like jellyfish. What is it about them?
Oh my gosh, yes. I totally love jellyfish, and I can't think of something that I would rather be doing on a Tuesday morning than drinking coffee and talking about jellyfish with the state of Maine. Where do I begin? Well, jellyfish, I feel like, you know, ever since I was a little kid, I was fascinated with like science fiction and space aliens and things like that. And in a lot of ways, jellyfish are sort of like the closest that we get, at least as far as we know. I don't have the inside track to like Roswell, New Mexico or anything. But as far as I'm aware, jellyfish are like the closest thing we have to space aliens. And they're so different from the things we encounter in our day-to-day lives that is just a source of endless fascination for me.
Well, a lot of excitement this summer because a picture of a lion's mane jellyfish that was 5 feet wide, or its hood, or its
bell,
it was 5 feet wide, went on to social media, and boy, that caught fire. News organizations all over the country picked up that story. And so I have to ask you, how unusual is that? Is it because it was at a popular beach in a popular town, or is it indeed kind of unusual for a 5 foot lion's mane to be in shallow water in Maine?
Yeah, so many people have been asking me that question. I just described jellyfish as like space aliens, but they're actually just a normal part of our ocean. So maybe I should stop doing that. But yeah, lion's manes are pretty much the biggest jellyfish that are out there. They can grow, that their tentacles can be 100 feet long or more. That's like as long or longer than a blue whale. And that bell, kind of the roundish part that most people are familiar with seeing on a lion's mane jellyfish, that can get to be 6 or 7 feet across. We don't always see them that big, but there are off and on accounts on the coast of Maine and the Gulf of Maine of really big specimens like that. I think it was like maybe about 15 years ago, there was a big lion's mane jellyfish that was maybe 20 or 30 feet long that stung something like 100 people as it washed into shore.
Whoa.
And sorry, go ahead.
That's amazing that because its tentacles were so long that people didn't even see it. Yeah, go ahead.
Exactly. Yeah. And Yeah, just a couple more examples of the really big ones. We've been keeping track of people's reports of jellyfish going back to about 2014 in Maine. And there have been a couple of times off and on where we get years where there are just lots of these big ones. 2019 and 2020 were the most recent, where people were just describing lion's mane jellyfish that were like 4 to 6 feet across. There was even like some photos of a humpback whale playing with one, like picking it up with the front of its mouth.
Wow. So with these years that there are kind of surges in sightings, Nick, and this is one of the reasons I'm really excited to have you on the program, that you've been keeping track for a decade now of sightings around the state.
Yeah.
Is there a reason for the surge? Are there some years that is there something going on in the water? Is there something going on with the weather? Why do we see more jellyfish some years than others?
Yeah, that's a really hard question to answer. And I'm going to answer it in kind of a scientist way by talking about some of the many possibilities. I hope that's okay. There's an idea out there that I call the jelly ocean hypothesis. And this is that idea that jellyfish are gradually taking over the ocean. It goes back at least to the science fiction author Jules Verne, who wrote like 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea and stuff like that. And he was watching like fisheries collapses and thought eventually jellyfish are just going to take over because all the fish will be gone. And indeed, that has happened in some places. So scientists now have kind of taken that idea on as a hypothesis. Is the ocean going to shift to be dominated by jellyfish of all kinds? And the reasons are things like there are places that are overfished where jellyfish take over because they're eating some of the same things that fish would normally eat. So they can kind of lock in and keep fish from recovering. But there's other reasons too, like some people look at temperature changes. Jellyfish can sometimes grow faster in warmer temperatures. There's just human development. Jellyfish have this like polyp stage, which is also kind of otherworldly. They sort of look like plants growing off the like anything they can attach to. And then off the end of the branches, the baby jellyfish, which are called Ephyra, kind of bud off. It almost looks like a fruit coming off a tree, but it's, of course, it's an animal, not a plant. But anyway, so as seasides get developed, there's more surface area for those polyps to stick to. So there are all these reasons that jellyfish have advantages now that they wouldn't have before a lot of the kind of the human activities in the ocean. And so this all contributes to this idea of a jelly ocean hypothesis. But it's something that's still debated in scientific circles. So some people say, yes, jellyfish are taking over. Other people say, well, hang on, this is only happening here or only happening there. So we don't totally know if that's the path that the ocean is going to take. And so then, like, if you look at the Gulf of Maine or coastal Maine and say, well, are any of those factors at play here? None of them really fit the bill. Like the lion's mane jellyfish, the one we're seeing a lot of, is actually a cold water adapted species. It's subarctic, so warming doesn't really make sense. We don't have a lot of coastal development that they could grow off of. There has been overfishing here in the past, but there's not a lot going on right now. So a lot of those hypotheses don't quite make sense. I would guess that the years that we have these really big jellyfish aggregations has to do with two factors. One is food is really good for jellyfish, so they to get big and abundant, they need a lot to eat, and that's probably just the natural productivity of coastal Maine, which goes up and down over years. And the other factor is just the physics of the ocean. There's probably either wind or currents have shifted in such a way that they're aggregating near shore because they're always there. They just might not always be on the beaches where we see them.
Okay,
So
what
that's a
do they
long-winded
eat?
answer to
No,
a
I
question
love the
everybody's
answer.
asking me.
And you know, if I walk away with anything today, it's going to be knowledge of the jelly ocean hypothesis.
Yes,
And
trademark.
it is going to give our executive producer, Jonathan Smith, nightmares. But
Well, that's my goal.
I have to ask you, what do they eat?
Yeah, jellyfish, I mean, they start out really small. And so when they're at that really tiny size, they're eating microscopic plankton, kind of whatever drifts by. And as they grow larger, they'll eat larger plankton, like small invertebrates, crustaceans, and things like that. As they grow larger, they could be eating larval fish and eventually just small fish. And they also eat each other. So that kind of anything that drifts into their tentacles and gets stung, they can potentially digest. There are some fish that are adapted to basically not be affected by the stinging tentacles, but for the most part, it's whatever drifts in there. So there's more fodder for your producer's nightmares.
On the line with us now is Ogunquit Fire Chief Russell Osgood. Chief, thanks so much for calling in.
Sure, no problem.
As you heard, we're talking jellyfish today, and I'm wondering, Ogunquit has such beautiful beaches. I know in the past there have been jellyfish sightings there. Tell us about this summer. Have you already had some?
Oh, we've had plenty this summer. We've had multiple stings daily. We've seen dozens of them in the water. Generally, they're not real close to shore, in large numbers, but we've taken our rescue boat out and out off a little bit. There's lots of them, more than I've seen in the past.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if it's a typical year. So you think this may be one of those years that there's a surge?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a surge. I've been fire chief here for 4 years, and we would over that time, it's been one or two, reports. This year, it's a lot. And if you walk the beach, you can see them in the surf. You can see them on the sand. And it's both lion's manes, and I think they call them the moon jellies, the smaller ones that are clear. There's lots of those. There seems to be a lot more of those, but those are common. But the lion mane, not so common, I would say, until this year.
Oh, I have to ask you, I'm sure you've seen the picture on social media of the big lion's mane jellyfish on Willard Beach in South Portland. And I also saw one on Peaks Island, a picture circulating on one of Peaks Island. Have you seen any of those really big ones on Ogunquit?
I have not seen any of that size. We've seen them maybe a foot to 2 feet across out in the water. Most of them are a lot smaller than that, but yeah, they're out there. And the big problem with swimmers is that you could see it off in the distance, and because their tentacles are so long, you could get wrapped up in them pretty easily, even if they're 10, 15, 20 feet away. So we've been trying to educate people about just how massive these jellyfish are. Even if their bell looks small, they still could have a lot of trailing behind them.
That's a really good public service announcement. Speaking of public safety, what do you do if somebody spots a jellyfish? You have a warning system, right?
We do. We have a flag system that we use here on the beach that consists of different colored flags. Green is it's a low hazard, so it's a surf condition. But we use a purple flag to let people know that there are things in the water, such as jellyfish, stingrays, or marine life that might cause injury. But it has nothing to do with sharks, so we want to make sure people understand that. We also use that is for elevated bacteria levels. We do have some areas where we have some elevated bacteria levels, so we also fly those flags to indicate that. So what we try to do is put the flag out, and we're hoping that has people asking the question, like, why are you flying the purple flag? And then we can tell them, look, we've seen jellyfish in this area, stay away from it. But they move around so much, it's kind of tough. So we just try to make sure people understand that they're there, it's the ocean, and they need to keep their eyes peeled for those things that could sting you.
What do your lifeguards do if someone's stung?
So they give them a little bit of advice about what to do and what not to do, and we watch them for anaphylaxis. It's pretty rare to have somebody have a severe allergic reaction, but it is a risk. So we tell folks, or we'll in some cases help remove the tentacles that are still there, and you do that with tweezers or scrape them off so you don't get them on your hands. And then we'll talk to them about going to the up to the rest restrooms and use some warm water to rinse off the stingers, the tentacles, or what's remaining. There's a lot of myths about what you're supposed to do for jellyfish stings that are inaccurate, and we get those questions quite a bit, and we try to veer people away from that
Well,
discussion.
I'm so glad you read my mind, because one of the myths I've heard my entire life, Chief, and I apologize for saying this on the air, but I've heard it, and I'm sure our audience has well, is that you're supposed to pee on the sting.
Yeah, that's one I've heard a lot. We hear it a lot. I hear it a lot, and that's not an accurate treatment. It's probably not the smartest thing you could do. There are a few things you can do. You know, the big thing is to remove the tentacles, take some regular just over-the-counter pain relief if it's hurting you. You can rinse the area with vinegar. That type of will neutralize some of the venom from the research I've done. And soaking in hot water actually seems to be one of the things that will inactivate the toxins. But you got to do it for 20 minutes or so. So it's not, there's nothing quick. The big thing to think about, though, I think, is if you're starting to have a severe reaction, some difficulty breathing, chest pain, or severe swelling, you need to get help right away. And that's where, the lifeguards would be calling for an ambulance to come down, and we can treat people for anaphylaxis in our ambulance. But, yeah, avoid the urine and ice packs and rinsing with fresh water, things like that. It actually makes it worse in the long run.
Okay, Nick Record is with us, and Nick has been tracking jellyfish in Maine waters for more than a decade now. Nick, I'm wondering we have the chief on the line. You have any questions for him?
Yeah, Chief, I'm curious if you are keeping any records of like what you've been seeing over the years, or just even when the flag system goes up. I mean, that's data that I could use in my studies.
Yeah, honestly, this is the first year I've seen the purple flag go up. So that's some pretty good data for you. That it's in my 4 years, it's been pretty rare that we put it up, and this year it's been so many. There's been so many incidents that we felt it was really prudent to do that. And we're not really keeping records of, we do keep records of, like, if we take care of somebody that was stinged, they do have some of that data. I'm more than happy to share it with you.
Yeah, that would be great.
Great.
Thanks.
Well, Chief Osgood, thank you so much for calling in, and I hope you have a beautiful summer. Ogunquit Beach is, the beaches there are about as pretty as they come, so I hope people are able to swim safely all summer long. Thank you. We are talking about jellyfish on Maine Calling. Before we go to a break, Nick, though, I want to ask you, we've now mentioned lion's mane jellyfish and moon jellies. How many different types of jellyfish are in our waters, in the Gulf of Maine, especially within a mile or two of shore?
Yeah, those are definitely the two most common. And we get reports of those moon jellies and lion's manes every year up and down the coast of Maine. The other ones we'll get off and on are the white cross jellyfish, which you mostly find in down east Maine. It's smaller, it's clear, and it has a white cross on it. We've gotten one mauve stinger, which is like this beautiful purple ball-shaped jellyfish, which occasionally winds up in the Gulf of Maine. And then there are these other types of gelatinous plankton that people kind of lump in with jellyfish. So like comb jellies, for example, and they're totally unrelated to jellyfish. But people, because they look sort of like jellyfish and they're gelatinous and kind of float around in a similar way, people tend to lump them in together. So we get a lot of reports of comb jellies. Some people call those sea gooseberries. They look like basically gelatinous balls. Although if you see them actually swimming around in the water, they're quite beautiful. And then there's some other things like siphonophores, which we don't really get Portuguese man o' war in Maine, but that's an example of a siphonophore. We get other ones, but there are these sort of jellyfish-like characters that we tend to see off and on as well.
Well, when we come back from our break, we're going to learn about a place you can see jellyfish safely if you'd like to. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We are learning about jellyfish in the Gulf of Maine. With me today, Nick Record, who is a senior research scientist with the Bigelow Lab for Ocean Sciences. Share your comments and questions about jellyfish. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or call 1-800-399-3566. On the line with us now is Dottie Younger, who is director of the Education Division with the Maine Department of Marine Resources. She is calling from the Maine State Aquarium in Boothe Bay Harbor. Thanks for calling in, Dottie.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
I understand there is a brand new jellyfish tank at the aquarium. Tell me about it.
Yes, so we have a specially designed tank for jellyfish. It's called a chrysal. That's the name of the person who invented this particular kind of tank. And it is a tank that that allows us to create a current in it that will carry the moon jellies around, right? They're getting caught in currents and being moved around in the ocean, so we can replicate currents. And the tank doesn't have any square edges. The jellies will get caught in a crevice in a tank, in a square edge of a tank, and then they can't get carried around by the current. So this tank is oval, and that allows the jellies to move around naturally as they would in the wild, because as they're swimming around in the current, they're feeding. And this way we can feed them in a natural, as much as possible, setting.
And what kind of jellies do you have right now?
So right now we do have a couple of lion's manes on display. We were getting a lot of calls from people who, of course, were seeing all of the news stories. And where we are located in Booth Bay Harbor, we could just go right off of our research pier and collect them. So we brought some in so we could talk to people about lion's manes, which are fascinating. And actually tomorrow we're going to be, we've just been collecting moon jellies. So we're going to switch over the exhibit and have it be moon jellies. So those are the smaller ones that Nick was talking about. They're clear. Their bell is bigger than their tentacles. They don't have the long tentacles like the lion's mane do. And they pulsate and will have, you know, roughly 75 or so of them. So it'll look like a bloom out in the harbor, and they will circulate around in this specially designed tank for them.
Nice. I have to ask you, what is the reaction so far from visitors? What are you hearing adults and children say when they look at the jellyfish?
They are fascinated by them, and the kids in particular. The tank is only about 30 inches high, so it's right at kid level, and it's right when you come in the aquarium. And I just watch little kids in particular walk right up to the glass, and then they'll just sort of plop themselves down on the floor and just stare mesmerized watching these jellies just floating around in this sort of hypnotic circle. And when we feed the jellies, we raise food for them, and we raise them right there where the exhibit is so people can learn about what we're feeding the jellies. We feed them Artemia. They're called brine shrimp. If you remember the sea monkeys, there were ads in magazines to buy sea monkeys. That's basically what they are, but they're bright orange. And when you feed the moon jellies, you can see the brine shrimp. You can see that orange in their bells. So you can literally watch them turn orange. You can watch them feeding and eating their food.
Wow. Well, Dottie, thank you so much. Congratulations. Dottie Younger is calling from the Maine State Aquarium, where you can see jellyfish safely. Thanks for calling. And apparently there's another place, too, because Ben is calling from the Oceanarium Education System in Bar Harbor. Hi, Ben.
Hi. How are you doing today?
Good. And your audio sounds a little funny. Are you on a cell phone?
Yeah, we're on a cell phone right now. I just heard you guys talk about jellyfish on Maine Calling. And, yeah, just wanted to call in and let you all know that the Oceanarium of Bar Harbor, we've also got a jellyfish tank. So if you find yourself down in that area, definitely feel free to come on by and give us a visit. We've got a big moon jelly tank right now. And actually, Dottie has been an amazing asset to helping us with getting things running. So I want to give her a shout-out as well. Definitely check out the Maine State Aquarium. They got some great stuff going there.
Wonderful, Ben. Thank you so much for calling in and letting us know that the Oceanarium in Bar Harbor also has a jellyfish tank. Nick, I'll just ask you before we go into some of these other questions that are coming in. When you
when people go to one of these places, when they go to the Maine State Aquarium, when they go to Oceanarium, what do you hope they come away with that maybe they didn't quite get before about jellyfish?
Oh, I think a lot of people, like when they first ask me about jellyfish, it's with this kind of sense that jellyfish are like a nuisance or something that shouldn't be there. But jellyfish are like, they're valuable for, well, they're a natural part of the ocean ecosystem. They're beautiful and they do a lot of great things. And so I hope people walk away with maybe a little bit more sympathy or attachment to some of these amazing species.
Okay, we'll go to Torbert calling from York. Hi, Torbert, go ahead.
Good morning, Jennifer and Mr. Record. My understanding is that the jellyfish is at the cellular level undifferentiated, that all the cells are the same, and it acts as a colonial life form. Somehow they manage to organize themselves without a central nervous system into all the functions that they have. How is this possible? Is this a chemical miracle?
That's pretty much right. How is it possible? I think I would say science is still trying to figure that out. If you might have heard of the immortal jellyfish, which is a species of jellyfish that can do something called transdifferentiation, which means it can its cells can revert back to like the juvenile or the young stage of life. And so instead of dying at the end of life, like most animals, it can basically become young again, and it can keep doing that again and again, hypothetically living forever. So it's taken on this nickname, the immortal jellyfish. And there's some recent studies, there's one paper that came out in the last couple of years where they think they demonstrated that moon jellyfish can do that as well. And that's still a subject of ongoing research. But jellyfish, so far as we know, are the only animals that do that sort of thing. And and you're right, they have no sort of central nervous system. And I think there's just a lot of mysteries about the way these animals work in general. They're so different from the life that we're used to on land that we're still trying to figure a lot of that out.
So interesting, Torbert. Thank you. And do we know, Nick? I mean, are these prehistoric, or is there no way to know?
Yeah, jellyfish have been around. So as far as we know, jellyfish have been around for hundreds of millions of years, which I learned from this great book, Sharks Don't Sink, by Jasmine Graham, that's longer than Saturn has had rings. So they've been around for quite a long time. And, you know, if you think about that, that's surviving through the dinosaurs' extinction, multiple like global extinction events. So whatever jellyfish are doing, it works. And, you know, chances are that they're going to outlast us as well.
Calling in now, Mary L. Thomas, who is a microbiologist with the Fish Health Lab at Maine's Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife. Thanks so much for calling in, Mary L.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Well, we've spent most of this program discussing jellyfish in the Gulf of Maine, but I understand there is also such a thing as freshwater jellyfish. Describe them.
Yes, there are. So in the state of Maine, we actually only have one species of freshwater jellyfish, and they're actually not jellyfish or considered true jellyfish. They are in the same family or the same phylum as true jellyfish, so as the oceanic ones that we have been talking about earlier today. These are actually hydrozoans. So freshwater jellyfish are called jellyfish because the life stage that you are actually seeing when you do see them in the lakes and ponds in the state of Maine are their medusa form. The reason why they are not considered true jellyfish is because, unlike true jellyfish, they spend most of their life as the polyp stage and very little parts of their life as the actual medusa. So they look very similar to true jellyfish. They still have the bell, they still have the tentacles, they still have defense mechanisms the same way, but they're just slightly different.
That's interesting. So the medusa phase that you might see is sort of the end of their life?
Yeah, it's their sexual reproductive stage. So they are capable of reproducing asexually and sexually. If conditions are favorable, like there's a whole bunch of conditions that can actually contribute to it. Water temperature, food availability, as you guys were talking about earlier today. Depending on conditions, you might see the Hydromedusa or you might not. They do have, like I said, the ability to reproduce asexually via budding. And when you do see the Medusa stage, that is their final stage as their sexual reproductive stage.
How many of Maine's lakes and ponds have these freshwater jellyfish that aren't really jellyfish?
So that actually is a really good question. These jellyfish are pretty unique in that you can probably have them in a vast majority of waters, but they go completely undetected. Because their polyp stage is so small, that borderline microscopic, that they can be present in bodies of water for years up to decades before you actually have a Medusa bloom. So the actual number of lakes and ponds in the state of Maine where these jellyfish are actually present is completely unknown.
Wow. I have to ask you, do they also sting? And if so, is it as bad as the ones that we're talking about that are in the ocean?
So they do have the ability to sting. They do have the same defense mechanisms as oceanic jellyfish do. The main difference is these jellies are very small. The biggest that they can typically get is around the size of a nickel, to put things in comparison. Because they're small, they do tend to feed on much smaller prey, like zooplankton, copepods, rotifers. And because of that, their stinging cells are incredibly weak. So they do not have the ability to inflict any sort of harm on people or animals or anything like that. So overall, they're pretty harmless compared to the ones in the ocean.
Well, thank you so much for calling in. That's Mariel Thomas, a microbiologist with the Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife. I really appreciate it. I'm going to go to an email here, Nick. This is this one's from Sandy. One of the jellyfish I saw in Pemaquid Harbor/river was pretty big and red, but I didn't notice really long tentacles. Perhaps that was a lion's mane jellyfish. So if Sandy saw a big red jellyfish but didn't see tentacles, what would you say to her?
Yeah, I think it's most likely a lion's mane, and it's probably dead or dying and washing in to the shore. Like a lot of the ones that we see washed up don't have, they're missing their tentacles or much of their tentacles or that sort of thing. So probably it's a lion's mane. And I will also say, this is my chance to make a plug. If anybody is out there seeing jellyfish, the only way that we have of recording this data is from you seeing them and sending in the sightings. There's no formal jellyfish survey along the coast of Maine. And so I've made this email address, jellyfish@bigelow.org. And I, over the years, I've collected thousands of reports just like that one that you just said. And I've turned it all into data with like latitudes and longitudes and descriptions of what we've seen. And that's the data set that I'm using to look back over the last 10 or 15 years to just kind of describe the changes that we're seeing. A lot of them do match just what you're saying. And I think it's probably a dead or dying lion's mane that's washing up.
So if there's one message you want people to come away with, if you see a jellyfish, send Nick an email.
Yes, and I'll probably email you back. I love getting, I've gotten so many stories from people up and down the coast. Some of them will send me like, you know, here's me shirtless with a jellyfish on the end of the stick or whatever, stuff like that. I won't give you medical advice, but I might be able to answer some of your questions about like what's going on in your neck of the coast.
Okay, I'm going to repeat that email and tell me it's right. jellyfish@bigelow.org?
You got it.
All right, we'll go to Elizabeth, who's calling from Parsonsfield. Hi, Elizabeth, go ahead.
Hi. This comment may or may not be of help for pain relief. And working on jellyfish, I imagine it might work for a small amount of injected venom from a little jellyfish. But anyway, to make a long story short, when I'm in the woods or even working around the homestead, I always carry toothpaste with me because my homestead is infested with ground hornets or wasps or whatever plants making nests in the ground, and also they get in my greenhouse. Well, anyway.
Wow, Elizabeth, thank you for that tip, toothpaste. And we have an email here from Betsy. While living in the Marshall Islands, I learned about making a paste of Adolph's meat tenderizer to put on jellyfish stings. It works by breaking down the proteins in the venom, works on bee and wasp stings too. So, Nick, I know you said that this is not your area of expertise, but just have to ask you if you've heard about either toothpaste or Adolph's meat tenderizer to treat these stings.
You're right. I'm not going to give advice on either of those remedies, but I love hearing them. I've not heard either one of those before. And one of the beautiful things about getting all these jellyfish reports over the years is getting all kinds of other interesting information like that.
Wonderful.
It's probably not like your experience with Maine calling.
That's for sure. Elizabeth, thank you so much for your call. What are your questions about jellyfish in Maine? Have you seen a jellyfish? Do you have an encounter, a story to share? Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566, or send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today, we are talking about jellyfish, the reason people are seeing them in Maine, especially the big red lion's mane jellyfish. This seems to be a summer that we're seeing a lot of sightings. Joining me, Nick Record with the Bigelow Lab for Ocean Sciences. He keeps track of jellyfish in Maine, has been doing so for 10 years. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email, if you're quick, to mainepublic.org or find us on social media. Nick, what is something that you haven't told us yet about jellyfish that we are going to repeat at our next dinner party?
Oh, I hope I can go to those dinner parties. Sure. Yeah. Some interesting stories that I like to share about jellyfish. Well, one is that jellyfish, these really big aggregations or blooms, or sometimes people call them outbreaks, they can do things like they've shut down nuclear power plants. Nuclear power plants often have to pull in water for cooling. And if there's a lot of jellyfish in that water, they might have to shut down. And that also happened on the this giant aircraft carrier, the USS Ronald Reagan. Was also uses a similar mechanism, and it sucked in a bunch of jellyfish and it shut down the entire vessel.
That could be a weapon.
The military could
deploy them.
You know, if we ever figured out how to use jellyfish as a weapon, then we would get some funding to do research, I bet.
Okay, you were going to tell us another factoid.
Oh, sure. These big jellyfish outbreaks have often influenced fishing and aquaculture. So there have been some cases, like there was one in Ireland where a big aggregation of jellyfish flowed through and it killed a bunch of fish. So they do have a lot of impacts like that. And, I wouldn't think about it as a weapon, but one of the things we're trying to do is develop jellyfish forecasts so that people can know ahead of time, like areas to avoid, or if they need to shut down some operation ahead of time, that sort of thing. And so maybe someday you'll be able to turn on the news or hear Lou McNally give you the daily jellyfish forecast.
That would be great. We're going to go to Claire, who's calling from Richmond. Hi, Claire. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Great program, Jennifer, by the way.
Thank you.
So when I was a kid, I lived in Portsmouth, Virginia, and used to go to Virginia Beach. And jellyfish were pretty common. And they told us that the clear jellyfish didn't sting, but the colored ones did. And I was wondering if there's any truth to that.
Oh, that's interesting. I don't know all the species that are down in Virginia. I do know there's the sea nettle is a really common stinging one there, which is does have some coloration. That rule of thumb roughly applies in Maine. The lion's manes are much more like richly colored than the moon jellies, and the lion's manes are the ones with the much more harmful sting. But I don't know how global that rule of thumb is. I feel like if I'm in the water and I see a jellyfish and I don't know if it stings or not, I would just avoid it. That's really interesting.
Yeah, thanks for your call. We will go up to Camden and Matt. Hi, Matt. Go ahead.
Hey, Jennifer. Hey, Nick. I just wanted to say I saw a jellyfish in Camden Harbor that was probably the size of a coffee table. I mean, maybe 3 or 4 feet in diameter. Is that abnormal? Is that sort of a big one?
That's pretty big. Can you tell me, do you remember what day you saw it? I'll add it to my database.
Yeah, it was a couple days ago. I took a picture of it, so I heard about your email, so I'd be happy to send it over there as well.
Yeah, that would be great. It's hard to say whether it's common or not. Jellyfish have this, you know, this property where they could show up in large numbers and then they could disappear for years at a time. And so like the chief down in Agunkwit was saying, he hasn't seen them in his time, but he's only been there for 4 years. And the last year where we had these really big lion's manes was 2019 and into 2020. So that would have been right before he started. And there were a lot of reports that year of lion's manes that were about 3 to 4 feet across. And then some, like I said earlier, that were more like 6 feet across. So I wouldn't exactly say that it's common because, you know, we might go many years without seeing them like that. But it's also not uncommon because as far back as you go, there are reports, maybe every 5 years or every 15 years or something like that, of this type of event happening.
These big lion's mane jellyfish, we've heard, Nick, now from Agunkwit. We've heard from South Portland and now Camden. How far up the Maine coast or how far down the Maine coast have they been spotted?
This year, we have some reports from like the Mount Desert Island area as well. And in the years where we get lots and lots of lion's manes, I mean, it's all the way up into Atlantic Canada. It's a subarctic species, so what we're seeing here, they're seeing up there as well. One of my favorite photos is this. I got a picture from a clammer who's just like standing in front of this. That must be 6 or 7 feet across jellyfish. And he's holding his hoe and just like looking down like, what is this thing? And that was down East Maine.
A Facebook post here from Jeff. Jeff says, please discuss that the Gulf of Maine is warming faster than any other saltwater area. And that is true, Nick, but that doesn't seem to be what is as you said, the reason for these lion's mane, right?
It wouldn't seem to be just because it's a subarctic species. Yes, the Gulf of Maine has gone through a really rapid warming period. The last couple of years, we've seen a leveling off, but we don't expect that to be permanent either. It's probably going to keep warming. But as far as we know, there isn't a clear link between water temperatures and the lion's mane jellyfish. There probably are like some subtle linkages between like the physics, the currents, and lots of things that are happening. They do have faster metabolism in warmer water, but you know, at some point it gets too warm for lion's mane jellyfish as well.
We'll go to Josh, who's calling from Brunswick. Hi, Josh, go ahead.
Hi, enjoying another interesting and entertaining show. Nick, another sighting for your database. I go kayaking in McCoit Bay in Brunswick. It's a tidal bay. I go a couple of times a month. I've been doing it for maybe 10 years. And then about 10 days ago was the first time I'd ever seen a jellyfish there.
Wow. Was it the moon jellies or the lion's mane? Or do you maybe you don't remember?
You know, it was about the size of maybe a soup bowl.
Okay.
You know, I didn't want to disturb it, actually, so I steered clear.
Josh, was it red or was it clear?
It was clear. Okay.
Sounds like a moon jelly. Yeah, that's great. I'll add that. And if you, anytime you see them, send them into that email address I gave earlier, jellyfish@bigelow.org, and it will go right into our database and maybe someday into our forecasts.
So Josh, Nick, I want to ask you, if Josh is kayaking, he sees a jellyfish, is there a distance it needs to stay away, or can he sort of paddle right up next to it to get a good look at it? Would it harm the jellyfish at all to get within a foot or two?
I mean, so if it's a lion's mane and your kayak paddle went right through the tentacles, yeah, that would harm it.
I see. So you want to stay away from the tentacles. Got it. Thank you, Josh, for your call. Let's see. We'll go to Ivy, who's calling from Friendship. Hi, Ivy. Go ahead.
Hey there. As a girl who grew up around the Chesapeake Bay, I can attest to the benefits of Old Bay seasoning for jellyfish stings. But I have to say, the one good thing about jellyfish is that it keeps big developers away.
Well, Ivy, thanks so much for this. A question I haven't asked you yet, Nick, and we're getting tight on time. Do jellyfish have any predators?
Oh, yeah. One of their, so they, like I said earlier, they do eat each other. I got a report just this past week, someone described a lion's mane eating a moon jellyfish. But sea turtles also, like the leatherback sea turtle, primarily eats jellyfish. And one of the things we're doing with like our jellyfish models is using them to predict where sea turtles are. That's a project we've got going on a lot between Bigelow and the New England Aquarium. So
wow.
Yeah, they do have predators. I mean, if you're out there in the ocean, probably there's something that eats you.
We're going to go to Maggie in York. Hi, Maggie, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My question is, when the seas are rough, does it break up the jellyfish? In other words, if you go in swimming, you don't see them, but they could be tentacles and things hanging around. You know, do you get stingy water?
Stingy water, that's a phrase I haven't heard. There are cases where, like, if the coastal environment is rough enough, it can break up jellyfish. And definitely if jellyfish are dying and washing up, their tentacles will probably be floating around too. And you can get stung even after the jellyfish is dead. I can't say like the exact ocean conditions that might cause that. But yeah, that does sound like something that probably happens.
Nick, is there something you can do to protect yourself? For example, if ocean swimmers wear a wetsuit but then put something like Vaseline on their face, will that protect you from a sting?
You know, I don't know. I don't, other than staying away from them, I try not to give too much advice on that front. I guess probably if your body is covered, you should be okay.
Okay. Here's an email from Tim. My dog Angus and I were at the Willard Beach when the lion's mane showed up. When I was next there, I was nervous about letting him swim. Should I worry about it?
Yeah, I think, I don't really know if like they have fur, like how, if it hit them in the face, it would probably sting them. But you know, I don't really know like how susceptible dogs are to jellyfish stings.
So this is interesting. We've heard about, and you know, you say you're tracking these, Nick. We've already heard from somebody kayaks in McCoit Bay, and Sandy here is saying that she's seen them far upstream on the Damariscotta River and in Pemaquid Harbor. And I'm wondering, where is sort of the furthest up a tidal river that you've had a report of a jellyfish?
Ooh, that's a great question. Yeah, we've definitely had them up the Sheepscot as far up as Wiscasset. You know, kind of anywhere that it's tidal, you could potentially get them.
So any tidal river, you can get a jellyfish, and to keep a lookout for them. We just have a couple minutes left. Some of the takeaways of today's program, Nick, is if you see a lion's mane, stay really far away. That staying even 25 feet or so may not be enough because their tentacles are so long. And also that... you know, there's a lot of unknowns about jellyfish, a lot of mysteries still. I'm wondering, what would you like to add in this last minute and a half? What would you like people to know, understand about jellyfish that they didn't before this hour?
Well, I could throw some more interesting jellyfish facts at you. There are jellyfish fisheries. There are types of jellyfish that people eat, which I think is like.
Have you tasted him?
No, I haven't. You know, I did live in Southeast Asia for a little while, but I never had the opportunity to try. That's one of the places where it's eaten, but I didn't have the opportunity to try any. The other thing, you know, I was thinking about your caller's comment about how jellyfish keep developers away. Like one of the amazing things about jellyfish is they can survive in like really degraded ecosystems. So for example, you might've heard of ocean dead zones. This is places where usually human activity, like over-fertilizing, has led to like a lack of oxygen in the water. But jellyfish can survive at much lower oxygen levels than fish and other marine life. So they have this like kind of amazing property where they can keep an ecosystem going even when it's really degraded. And I think like that's something that we should value about them. That like a lot of the damage that our development might be doing to the ocean, jellyfish might help us sort of heal or come back from that.
Well, thank you so much. You've been a wonderful guest. Nick Record is Senior Research Scientist with the Bigelow Lab for Ocean Sciences. Today's sound engineer was Sam Tracy. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, we welcome our car experts back to talk automotive news and to answer your questions. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.